This is a Collider.com audio interview.
So, I'm sure you both read a lot of scripts. Were you just entranced as you were reading this one?
That's yes.
Right.
I the first two pages of it, I was just... I was captured by her language and intrigued and knew that I loved it right off the bat. Before I even knew what part they were considering me for, I just thought, I want to be part of this. Definitely.
Yeah, me too, absolutely. And Jason handed it to me and said, this is really great, you got to read this. And same thing, didn't say, I want you to play Mac. He just said, read this. And I just thought, and I'm reading along going, if he wanted me to play Mac, he would have said something. Yeah. I want to play Mac, but, you know, this is so genius that I want to be. I literally, by the time I finished reading the script, I said, I would play the high school teacher that Olivia Thirlby says, me too, I love Woody Allen. I would play that part, who has no lines in the movie, just because I have to be in this movie.
I thought your character was particularly great because, you know, she's a stepmom who doesn't particularly like this stepdaughter, but, you know, as events move along, you know, really rises to the occasion and fulfills her role, and that's just... You know, one of the many great, like, I think, forgiving humanist themes that runs through this. Can you talk a little bit about
it definitely,
kind of
yeah.
complex relationship there?
It definitely kept surprising me, the script, when I was every turn, any time there was some where I thought it would go, like, oh, here's where the evil stepmother, you know, mm-hmm. makes it hard for Juno, and then she didn't. She was actually, okay, this is what you decided to do, then I'm going to support you, and this is what we're going to do, and it's not going to be easy, but I'm going to be here for you. And she really forged ahead and created a relationship with Juno where it really comes to blossom in the scene in the ultrasound where she comes to her defense when someone... There's so something wonderful about Diablo. There's none of her... She doesn't seem to judge any of her characters, and there's so many different kinds of women in there, and then the one woman who does is the one that I get to, like, tear into, which is always fun to get to do as an actor, to have the words right there to take someone down who deserves it. So it was a wonderful opportunity to play someone like that. It wasn't your typical... And Diablo herself is a stepmother, too. I think she wanted to debunk the evil stepmother myth personally and take that, you know, in a whole new direction.
Now, Ellen's obviously an amazing talent. What was it like for both of you?
We both found her... She's just wise beyond her years, incredibly intelligent, much different than a lot of young Hollywood actresses. Just very grounded, very smart.
Well, she's not a Hollywood actress.
She's not a Hollywood
actress.
She's
a Nova Scotia actress.
That's true. But she now is going to be conservative.
Yeah,
you know, and she'll bring that with her. Her sense of very strong sense of self and interesting set of choices and from the movies she's done so far. I mean. Really interesting choices.
Can you talk a little bit about your sort of working relationship with Jason? How does he communicate with his actors? Is he somebody that talks at great lengths with you guys about your characters and what should be going on? Or does he kind of let you play and then kind of tweaks it as he goes?
He really, I think like a lot of good directors, we didn't rehearse hardly at all. And I think he does... a lot of his work just in casting the movie, you know. I mean, did you even know him before this?
Nope.
Yeah.
I had not met him.
And I'd never met him before his first feature, and he, I went in and read for it, but basically, you know, he had seen me in a few things and just thought, well, this is the guy I want to play this part. And then the same thing for both of us in this film, you know. He didn't audition a bunch of actors and then it's just, you know, on the set, he's very low key. He's feels like he's surrounded himself with the cast that he wants, and he just trusts you, you know. But then you also find him, I think, really pretty subtly directing, which is a concept that is not always there on a set, directing you, you know, the way that he feels the scene needs to go, you know. There were, because in this, in all of my scenes, and I'm sure in all the scenes in the film, I felt like there were a lot of ways you could have gone with the response, even given the script, with the response to, I'm pregnant, you know. I mean, the first line after she says, I'm pregnant, is, I say, you're pregnant? And you know, how many ways can you do that when your 16-year-old daughter is telling you that, you know? And you know, there were times when I would be wanting to go a little bit more in one direction, and Jason would let me go there, and we'd do that, and then but then he'd pull back and say, now do it the way that it's going to end up being in the movie. but always, you know, with a great head and a great heart, you know.
Yeah.
Belying his youth.
How, y'all got children?
I have two.
I have a puppy. Which can be.
Just okay. Like
okay, well, I was going to ask you both about any teenage pregnancies in your family. You can address that, too, if you want.
Well, I was a late starter. My kids are 6 and 9, okay. So no pregnancies thus far.
I have a niece who's 13, but so far not yet. Okay. I'm hoping that doesn't happen to her.
And the puppy's keeping itself.
I'd had her spayed, actually, on Thursday, so I don't think she'll be able to.
Bob Walker, thank you.
I was curious, is it weird for you to constantly, I'm switching to a different film, but is it weird for you to have a lot of kids identify you with Spider-Man and that whole thing?
Oh, that's great, and it's especially great having a fourth grader and a first grader, because it's like instant, you know, cool dad credibility. And when I'm coaching their baseball teams, you know, it's automatic, you know, we're going to listen to this guy because, you know, he's in the Spider-Man movies. So that's the biggest, aside from the paycheck, that's the biggest benefit of doing those films.
You know? And then when they're in high school and they discover Oz, they'll listen to
him. Yeah. Yeah. I'm hoping that'll still play when, like, the boys are coming over to pick up my car. But I'll be, like, 65 years old by then, you know.
Is there a need, and this is for both of you, I guess, and obviously good script is a good script, but is there a need to choose roles with sort of your past in mind, and, well, am I getting typecast, or am I getting too many jokes, or too many snark queen roles, and we want to move away from that? Or?
I think you have to pay attention to that a little bit. I mean, I've just played two moms, but they were very, very different moms, and then, so I probably wouldn't jump into another mom part right away. I'd be looking for something a little different, and fortunately, I have the freedom to do that right now. But I think you do have to watch for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Oz could have become a real trap, and I turned down a lot of, you know, Nazi jerk parts after that happened. Actually, Jason, when he first hired me for his first film, Thank You for Smoking, we met, and he said, yeah, you're the only guy that I want in this part. He said, but I'm worried because he's a boss and he yells at people, and he said people are going to, you know, associate it too much with Spider-Man. He said, what do you think we can do to avoid that? And I said, well, I could not wear a flat top wig and chew a cigar, you know? because I wanted to be in the movie. You take a part sort of despite that risk. You could be, he's going to play the crabby boss, you know. Yeah, it was the crabby boss, but it was worth doing because that was a smart script too. And you know what? If people, you know, if all I get is dad offers, you know, as a result of this, then, you know, I'll sort through them and pick the best ones, you know. But hopefully, I'll be able to play a neo-Nazi next.
Both obviously had a lot of, you know, success on television. Is which medium do you think is offering you kind of more rewarding roles to play, or just more fun to go to work every day? Is it, you know, because you had Law and Order, The Closer, plus Oz and West Wing, of course, with you. Which
I miss the routine of West Wing. I liked having a steady job. I really, really loved that. it's so rare as an actor to have that kind of work, that it was the first time in my life I had that kind of stability and that kind of home to go to, and I really thrived in that. I loved it. I love doing movies too, but it's not as long a, you know, journey. Not every television experience is either. I was very lucky, so I definitely miss the routine.
Well, it's interesting because there's a difference. When you're doing a film, you have 2 hours to create a character. When you're doing television, you can have 50, 60, 70, 100 hours to sort of... I mean, like, is that
although at first, when you're doing a pilot, you know, you have like 3 scenes,
right?
You know, to create a character, and then maybe get the opportunity to,
yes,
you know, to do that. So,
but is there like an artistic sort of difference for you? I mean, sort of when you're on the third or fourth season of a show, and you really have now got this character, Is it sort of different than when you're on a movie and you're in, you're five weeks in and it's over?
There is a certain... You know, I never know what script. Sometimes with Aaron, I wouldn't know what, you know, where my character was going. So it was kind of like a new character every time, because I wouldn't like, oh, she's going to do this today. Like, it was always an adventure. But and then coming in to do this with not a lot of rehearsal time, it's you just kind of throw it up there and hope something sticks, you know. So you don't have the luxury of all the, you know, God, episode 200. I think I know who my character is. Finally.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's one of the different vibes is working in television as a series regular. When you get directors, you know, coming in who, you know, some of whom you work with somewhat regularly, and then sometimes a new director will come in, and you're on your 53rd episode, and they're not going to tell you, you know, what your character is about. You know, sometimes you're telling them, you know. Whereas on a film, you know, in all those cases, hopefully there's a meeting of the minds. But on a film, I think you're more. It's just more of a director's medium, you know, and you listen and do as you're told.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about whether or not you're contractually obligated to come back for a Spider-Man 4? And if so, if Sam or some of the other cast members don't return, are you still willing to come back?
I'm not contractually obligated. My understanding is that no one is. We were all of us who recurred in all the films were initially signed up to do the three films, including Sam and Toby and Kirsten and myself and everyone else. I'm hopeful that Sam will do more. I'm sure Sony will do more, I hope to be involved in any case. But it would be doubly great if Sam were still making the movies.
It's sounding more and more that Sam's going to come back as an executive producer or producer.
Well, yeah, I think in any case, if he's not, I love working with him as a director. If he's not the director, then I hope that is the case. I hope he's still, very involved in making the movie.